in your face. Joined by the legendary Sally Goldner, who won the Legacy Award at the Trans Visibility Awards here in Melbourne. Sally, welcome back to the show. Always great to have you on board.
Good to be with you, James. Thanks for the time.
Sally, it is so amazing, your legacy. No wonder they gave you the award. I mean, you and Julie Peters founded Transgender Victoria together in the 1990s, and it's been an extraordinary legacy with so many achievements, so many law reform achievements, for example. Can you take us back to that time and tell us what it was like for trans folks when you established Transgender Victoria back then?
That is such a good question, because I think that we need to know this. You know, in 1995, the state parliament passed laws protecting what was called lawful sexual activity, and at that point, that didn't cover trans, and it really didn't cover LGB that well either, when you think about it, because you weren't having sex, it wasn't any good. So in 1999, on the election of the then BRACT minority Labor government, and who didn't have a majority in either house of parliament, BRACT had promised to add, to improve the sexual orientation laws and add gender identity. It moved within 6 months. And it was a tough political climate, but it did put some sort of anti-discrimination protection on the board and covered a larger range of, I'll say, bots, use today's language, binary trans people. But it wasn't an easy battle. There were two relatively conservative independents who formed part of the minority government in the lower house. But it did get us on the board and cover a wider range. It wasn't surgery-based or transition-based, which at the time was well ahead. So I think that was a big one at the time. And we were able to build on that in Victoria and make sure that we had a sense of unity within the trans community. So,
what was the biggest challenge setting up Transgender Victoria?
The issue was at the time, going back to the 90s, which is documented in Noa Risman's fabulous Victorian Trans History, that at the time, back in 1996, an organisation called LAD, GLAAD, gay for lesbians, against discrimination, similar name to the American organisation folded, talk of a new advocacy group, and it was who should it include? And people said, well, you can't leave trans out. And then other people said, oh, but trans issues are left on the back seat. And it was the founding co-conveners of the then Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, now Victorian Pride Lobby, Janet Jukes and Brake Bampkin. And Brake moved to Sydney not long after founded for work, and the place was taken by the equally legendary Kenton Miller, who said, no, let's take a different approach. We'll set up a separate organisation, but we'll do some mentoring and community development. And that got us, you know, sort of moving so that we had that experience behind us until we were able to be more, we were a separate legal organisation, but until we, you know, we had that sort of support to lean on and that experience, which was great. But there was not a lot of support for trans or bi for that matter. And that's why in that time, I think it was really important that we got a good trans advocacy type of organisation as distinct from the two or three social / support groups that were running. So it was a really, really good move. And I think, I think looking back at it now with maybe a lot of benefit of hindsight, but I think at the time the vision was there, which it's now turned into hindsight in a way that it really did boost the trans community in Victoria. But it wasn't easy because of that sense of, unfortunately, to say, the misunderstandings or outright lateral hostility. So that was the issue at the time, yeah.
So the law reforms that we've had have been good here in Victoria. Still a long way to go. If you were to look into your crystal ball back then in the 90s, would you have imagined that we've got to the points that we've got to in the current era?
No, I wouldn't have. I mean, the things that were on the mind were to get some anti-discrimination protections on the board because, I'm going to digress for a second. I think it's important we tell this history because I feel like our history's been lost and there's a big generational gap or intergenerational learning need. But a lot of younger trans people don't, and queer people perhaps don't understand these issues. I'm going to give a quick example that happened only 2 days ago with me, talking to a 25-year-old, I say trans slash gender diverse person, who in turn was talking to a 15-year-old. 25-year-old was saying how, unfortunately, they were verbally bullied at school, and the 15-year-old couldn't believe it because that shouldn't have happened. So if the 15-year-old's not believing a 25-year-old, will there be understanding of what someone like myself, who's now 60, was going through? And when we didn't have that anti-discrimination protection, people would have been, would have tried to affirm their gender identity and be sadly instantly fired on the spot, and worse. There were no birth certificate laws at all, even surgery-based. So you were stuck with a birth certificate, say, for a trans woman that still had an M on it. And so these were basic things. And now when I look at where we've got, that we have trans-specific programs, I visited the Affirmation Station run by Transgender Victoria virtually this time last week. And, that's great that presence is there in a relatively safe space in Victoria. So I think that I don't think I would have believed that, because that was one of the things we wanted, was some sort of permanent base for trans people, or having, our own, some spaces in terms of like an affirmation station or offices for the organisations, things like that. But no, I don't think I would have believed it, because it seemed like it was so far away looking back. Yeah.
What is the most pressing law reform that the trans community needs?
I think I have to say, while it's not technically a law reform, the thing we need nationally is Medicare coverage for trans-related medical and surgical costs. And there was an article in the Nine media in August where the can's been ticked down the road, saying there's not enough evidence yet of the benefits of surgeries, which I just find bewildering, to put it politely, or I'm sure I could come up with a stronger word if I felt like it. And I think that's the biggest one nationally that's still outstanding. Law reforms, I mean, we have some states and territories that have some, sort of hate protections, and Victoria now does, but I think we need all of them, and nationally. And, I said this publicly last night at a Trans Day of Remembrance event. I think a lot of the Albanese federal Labor government needs some guts reassignment surgery, because they've been very disappointing on trans issues and queer issues. And I don't know what we do to change that, but we have to get it moving, because I think a lot of trans people are feeling abandoned. So federal issues, particularly Medicare and hate speech, are big. And, things that it was great in the last week on Victoria, where one thing, good thing has happened, that it is now free to change the sex marker on your birth certificate if it's a Victorian registration.
Yeah. That's in the press at the moment. And that is a great achievement, especially for so many trans folks that don't have a lot of money. That's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful thing. And it's a human right, isn't it? You shouldn't have to pay for that.
Well, that's the thing. The right to have a birth certificate that reflects your, one's own sense of self is a human right. And to pay for it when it wasn't your fault that it got, say, if I'm using myself as a straw case, it got issued with an M the first time and you didn't know because you were 10 seconds old, absolutely right. And, I think the fact that you will save, $140 for each Victorian wanting to change their sex marker on their certificate, I think that's a lot of money when you consider that's what, that's possibly about, say, it will take a quarter of a week of Centrelink. That's, that's a big chunk.
Sally, it must have been extraordinary to get the Legacy Award at the Trans Visibility Awards. Tell us about that moment when your name was read out.
It was really nice. I'm, without going into detail, personally, the last 5 or 6 years have been a bit rugged, and still are. But it did feel nice. I'm finding an issue out there that I think that, I'm going to start by saying trans seniors, and then say middle cohort of trans and sort of pioneers. There's a sense that people feel forgotten, and it was nice to get. It's nice to be affirmed. It's nice when you can generate your own self-affirmation, of course, but it's nice to get it from outside and people saying, yeah, you did a lot and you stuck at it for a long time. It was a good feeling. And it's nice to feel like you have a community around you, particularly if you've got either personal and or we have to bring this up. I think a week that has trans day remembers the troubled times that the challenging times that we have for trans people at the moment, given the nonsensical rhetoric that's out there.
Absolutely. Of course, as you say, it was Trans Day of Remembrance yesterday. You attended an event. Tell us about that event and the emotion that was present in the room.
Yeah, so I was honoured to speak actually at a joint event put on by City of Greater Dandenong and City of Monash, held down in Clayton, where they screened the 80s film Paris is Burning, which looked at Black and Latino ball culture of the 1980s in New York, but of course covered a lot of what we, to use today's language, we'd call trans and gender diverse, drag queen, as well as gay, and to some extent lesbian as well. And to some extent, when I spoke afterwards, the bit of a theme of the more things change, the more they stay the same, because we are still fighting for surgical pop. We're seeing this, sadly, this negativity that's being driven by the far right and, by a lot of misuse of the internet, bots, trolls, similar, and the emotion that's being whipped up. So I think that it was a very well-chosen film, and we need to talk about a lot of the issues that came up. And I'm pushing this a bit because it seems like it's talking to people out there. We seem to be on the cusp of something that a lot of our queer, in particular trans seniors, are now coming towards later in life and going, will we have secure housing? What happens if things go back, go further backwards? Where will we end up? And I think that was one of the topics that struck me, that if this was filmed in the 80s and the people from that are still alive, they're in their 60s. So I think it's something our community needs to start getting onto because we're not all sort of, to use that phrase from 20 years ago, double income, low kids, gay and lesbian. And a lot of us, I think, are feeling a bit, on many ways, insecure.
Sally, I have to ask, you've segued into a new career as a wrestling commentator and you're in the ring. What's the latest there?
The latest? Look, it's going along steadily. I don't know if I created a world record by being the first trans person to celebrate her 60th birthday on the exact night by doing a missile drop kick off the top rope, which was a bit of fun and just a nice little setup. Thanks to the nice people at Alpha Pro Wrestling. But it's bubbling along really well. And I've also developed an alternative character, which is a bit of a wrestling in thing called El Humongous Australiano. But you've got to understand wrestling, so I don't think we've got enough time left in the program to even explain that.
Sally, it is so great to hear your voice. Folks can hear you every Sunday on 3CR at noon for your extraordinary show, Out of the Pan. Congratulations on your legacy award at the Trans Visibility Awards. Always great to hear your voice.
Thanks, James. You look after yourself.
You too. Cheers. The wonderful Sally Goldner there.
3CR.